Hi everyone, welcome to your second side quest. I've been having fun experimenting with different types of stories. Like the first, this side quest is set in the world of Not the Hero, though it is from a very different perspective. Please enjoy The Bleeding Heart. The first rays of the rising sun caressed the windowsill. Lord Meissen Jern scowled. It was morning already. Time to rest. Time to wait. Meissen was used to waiting. Patience was usually one of his strongest attributes, but not today. He was restless. He slammed the shutters closed, banishing the sun from his presence. Despite his high station, there was nothing opulent about the Lord's sleeping chambers. Clothing and armor hung neatly along one wall. Several pairs of boots stood beneath. Weapons and artifacts were spread across a work table in a corner. Thick wooden shutters blocked all light from penetrating the room. The room had a functional, utilitarian feel. Only things with a purpose were permitted here. The only exception was an ancient tapestry that depicted a large white bird spreading its wings over a hatchling in its nest. Though the room was pitch black, Meissen saw the tapestry clearly. The dark did not hinder him. It covered him like armor, sharpening his senses, giving him an edge over all living things. Lord Meissen Jern had existed for a long time. He'd forgotten exactly how long. After about 700 years, another century's passing seemed of little consequence. He knew other vampires who celebrated their milestones. He remembered Lord Verdon's grand ball in honor of his 1,000th year. Meissen frowned at the memory. Celebrating was beneath him. It seemed such a human notion. Meissen paced back and forth, tracing a line on the stone floor in front of the coffin that leaned casually against the wall. Should he rest? He knew rest made him sharper, but it wasn't necessary. He was immortal, after all. Meissen once remained awake for an entire year, just to see what would happen. He never grew tired. He grew restless. There had been a stronger, more frequent urge to hunt. His thoughts were confused. His mind was unfocused. To rest today would be wise. It would keep him sharp. The old vampire needed his wits about him if he wanted his plan to succeed. And yet, he continued pacing. That night, Lord Meissen Jern's forces executed their mission. From atop a craggy hill, Meissen watched his army work. He was flanked by his lieutenants and co-conspirators. They included Count Vestuli Hecate, a high-ranking vampire with peerless knowledge of the arcane, and Selene Crow, a vampire enchantress and apprentice of Vestuli. Far below, Meissen's vampire underlings drove a mob of animated corpses into an unsuspecting human town. Meissen couldn't quite remember its name. Bellevue? Bullhead? Burnsickle? He shrugged. The battle, if one could call it that, was over before it began. The town's lone watchman, who had fallen asleep on duty, was dispatched by a swift claw to the throat. Four vampires joined in on the feeding, unable to resist the knight's first blood. Meissen noted their names for later punishment. For his campaign to be successful, his army would need greater self-control than a pack of wild dogs. Zombies entered the first few houses, following their arcane mandate to kill all who resisted, which was most. The vampire soldiers, who could not enter a dwelling unless invited, eagerly waited on rooftops and around corners to pick off those who managed to evade the zombies and escape their homes. At first, the vampires were ruthless and uninhibited. They killed and fed, satisfying their thirst. A delectable, iron smell wafted toward Meissen, who breathed it in greedily. He, however, had some restraint. For a moment, Meissen worried that all the villagers would be killed. But just as he was about to command his soldiers to follow his plan or suffer his wrath, the vampires started taking prisoners. Using two carts full of chains wheeled in by zombies, the vampires tied villagers to the maypole in the center of town. The number of prisoners grew, as humans were flushed from their homes like rabbits from bushes. None were permitted to escape. The night was theirs. Meissen turned to Count Vestuli Hecate and nodded. The handsome count, with his porcelain skin, blonde hair, blue eyes, and youthful, somewhat effeminate look, nodded back. Meissen then turned to Selene Crow and said,
"You and your master did fine work tonight, my lady."
Selene bowed briefly, like a tree blown by a sudden gust of wind. Like Vestuli, she was beautiful. Her pale white skin contrasted sharply against her raven black hair. Her bow was curt, as though she were unsure of their alliance with Meissen. It was all an act. As soon as Vestuli turned, Selene winked to Meissen. Meissen grinned, moonlight flashing from his fangs. That afternoon, Selene lay in Meissen's arms. They reclined together on a daybed, an ironic name for a piece of furniture in a vampire's castle, but one of the only useful pieces of furniture for vampiric lovers. It wasn't like Meissen owned a bed. The morbid darkness of a coffin provided the only suitable place of rest for a vampire. Coffins built for two were depressing, even by vampire standards. So, a daybed is where they spent the daylight hours, and where the pillow talk occurred. Selene wriggled in closer, watching the sliver of light that shone through the shuttered window grow dimmer by the minute.
"My love," she said, "it's time for us to rise. There is much to do this night."
Meissen leaned into her, holding her closer. He sighed.
"I would prefer to stay here this night. Your visits are becoming so rare."
Selene laughed at that.
"You act as though we have not been together all day. Do not become greedy, my love."
Meissen grinned, his fangs glinting even in the dim light.
"You're right. Greed is unbecoming of a god."
The vampires dressed and descended the spiral staircase to the first floor, where the tower merged with the main building. Meissen's castle had two towers, which flanked a moderately sized keep. It was called Castle Ramshorn, which sounded like a surname, but was in fact a description of how the castle looked. From the right perspective, the two towers appeared to curl back like the horns of a ram. Built on a rocky hill, the castle had a vantage point of the surrounding landscape. At night, the recently attacked village was barely visible in the distance. Now that all the inhabitants were dead or captured, there was no one to light the lanterns and torches. The village had faded into the background and would one day be reclaimed by the earth. Meissen and Selene walked with a slow, stately gait. Only the rich and powerful could afford to move this slowly. It showed the world that no one could make them hurry. Of course, that wasn't true. Meissen was simply a lord, after all, which basically meant he owned a castle and had first pick of the prey near his lair. Lowly vampires were expected to defer to him, or they risked being enslaved or destroyed. The same went for a lord like Meissen when it came to the Council of Counts. Like a lord, a count ruled from a castle. He or she ruled over several lords, their castles, and their territory. The counts were quite powerful in their own ways. Some commanded undead armies, others wielded powerful magic, while some relied on their irresistible charm. The Council of Counts met at each new moon to connive, plan, and otherwise rule over vampires and other creatures of the night. It was a mystery how Vestuli Hecate had secured a spot on the council. Meissen had his suspicions. Foul play was almost certainly involved. Wasn't it always? The only vampire the council deferred to was the High Lord, Agrodo d'Estoy. He had existed for so long that no one remembered how he essentially appointed himself King of the Night. But those in power knew better than to disobey their High Lord, who ruled through military might, awesome magic, and a charm so powerful that even the mightiest of vampires were enthralled by him, as easy as any vampire might seduce a maiden on All Hallows' Eve. Lord Meissen Jern and Enchantress Selene Crow continued their procession through the keep's grand dining room, out the engraved front doors, which were nestled beneath a sprawling stained glass window. During the day, the glass resembled a flock of doves crossing the rising sun. At night, the scene changed to depict bats flying across the harvest moon. Two vampire attendants bowed to the stately pair as they passed. Meissen eyed them thoughtfully. He had grown accustomed to a small house staff over the centuries. Since Count Vestuli Hecate and Selene Crow came into his orbit, things had changed rapidly. As a gift, Vestuli gave Meissen half a dozen vampire servants, and Selene animated corpses from a nearby graveyard to give him a sizable zombie workforce, a workforce that doubled as an army. Meissen and Selene, arm in arm, crept their way through the castle's raised portcullis. In the distance, the sun set. A line of dim sunlight receded before the vampires, as though light itself cowered in their presence. Their perfect timing was not an accident, for at the base of the hill, several hundred humans stared up at them. The humans were surrounded by zombies, each one wielding a crude weapon and commanded by Selene's necromancy to kill any prisoner who tried to escape. One of the vampire servants, dressed in priestly robes, awaited Meissen and Selene on a raised dais. The vampires alighted onto the stage, just as the sun finished sinking behind the distant mountains. The priestly vampire addressed the crowd.
"Humans! Tremble with fear and rejoice with gladness, for your saviors have arrived."
The crowd was silent. Somewhere, an infant cried. The speaker continued.
"For some time, your kind has been doomed. Doomed to extinction. Whatever gods you worshipped have abandoned you, damning you to wipe each other out with magic, or to be eaten by the many mindless monsters who roam these lands."
He paused for effect. There was a murmur in the crowd. Using his heightened senses, Meissen focused his ears on one conversation. A young woman leaned close to an elderly man and said, "There have been far more monsters about." A nearby portly man, overhearing, butted in.
"Aye, and did you hear what happened in Losalia with the pink flashes?"
The speaker continued.
"You are here for your own good. You have the privilege of living on the lands of Meissen Jern, your lord and savior."
A brave soul in the crowd, a woman in her 30s, spoke up.
"What kind of savior god murders our families and enslaves us all?"
There were murmurs of assent throughout the crowd. Of course there were. Selene nodded to a small animal, darting back and forth in the night sky above the crowd. The bat dived for the woman. At the last second, the bat transformed into its true vampire form. The impact would have killed the brave woman instantly, but the vampire landed in such a way that it only knocked her to the ground. It wanted the crowd to hear her scream as it fed upon her. Cries of fear rose from the crowd like a hellish choir. Pandemonium broke out. Zombie soldiers held their line, attacking any humans who tried to flee. Several zombies were overtaken by sheer numbers, as portions of the crowd stampeded away from their captors. Where zombies failed, vampires succeeded, corralling humans like the livestock they were. Dozens of men and women were cut down. They would provide nourishment for Meissen's staff for weeks. Lord Meissen sighed, understanding that he was going to have to sit through many more ceremonies just like this. He and Selene weathered the humans' insolence and relished in their fear for the better part of the night. Their goal wasn't just to terrify them, but to explain what the rest of their lives would look like. Wasn't that a kindness? The plan went thus. Put the humans to work, building themselves a new settlement in the shadow of Castle Ramshorn. Preach to them daily of the graciousness of their new lords and gods. The word vampire would be forbidden from being spoken, on pain of death. Other than that, and the strict rule against leaving, the humans would be free to live their lives as normal. After all, the idea was to keep the food supply close at hand. Before the next moon, the first holy sacrifice was performed. A lucky chosen one, a portly farmer who had organized 3 escape attempts, was selected as the first sacrifice. There was a great pomp and religious hullabaloo, followed by draining the man's blood into the aspersorium, a glorified basin out of which the vampires drank later that night. Life went on this way at Castle Ramshorn for a while, until it was time for another town to be claimed. This one went easier than the last. Only a handful of zombies were destroyed. The third campaign went similarly, until the town surrounding Castle Ramshorn swelled to a population of over 5,000. Lord Vestuli Hecate would visit often, holding meetings with Meissen, and occasionally bringing Selene back with him to assist with his work. While Vestuli took an active interest in Meissen's conquests, his true interest lied in his arcane experiments. Whenever Vestuli visited, the vampire priests would preach about the wonders of Elysium, and how only the most righteous would be chosen to join the gods in paradise while they still lived. Of course, Vestuli would have taken anyone for his experiments, but the charade had to be maintained. By the end of the first year, some humans were even beginning to drink the artificial fruit juice. The most zealous were rewarded with brief visits from restrained vampires, who used their supernatural charms to bring the zealots to a state of euphoria. The high only lasted a minute, but afterward, they would become true believers. The human livestock eventually realized that the most devout were most often spared from ritual sacrifice. Pretty soon, outward worship of Meissen, Selene, Vestuli, and their vampire attendants became commonplace. Humans led their own worship services, and churches sprung up all over town. Within a few years, many forgot that the only reason they worshipped was to avoid having their blood drained into a fancy bowl. During their midday trysts, Selene and Meissen would muse on the weakness of the human mind. Humans could be convinced of anything. Selene would laugh and say, "It's only a matter of time before mankind goes extinct from foolishness." Then, more seriously, "One day, enslaving mankind may be the only way to ensure the survival of our food source." Meissen enjoyed his new role as god ruler of their human livestock, but part of him felt it was wrong. Weren't vampires supposed to be like wolves, predators who stalk their prey by night? Keeping so many humans captive made things so easy. What was the point of the vampire's supernatural charm, sharp claws, shape-shifting, strength, speed, and fast healing? The hunter was becoming the farmer. Yes, it was clever, but it was boring. Vestuli and Selene did not seem to mind this transition. In fact, Selene was passionate about keeping the ruse going. She helped Meissen keep tabs on unruly townsfolk and had no qualms about using her zombie warriors or their vampire underlings to silence anyone who didn't fall in line. Selene even created an emergency plan to protect Castle Ramshorn in the event of a successful human uprising. This plan took the form of a green bracelet, which she bestowed upon Meissen during one of their trysts. Selene kept Meissen appraised of Vestuli's experiments and political maneuvering. Even she did not understand the purpose of his experiments, but he always seemed to need more human bodies. His political goal was obvious: power. Meissen suspected that Vestuli may have the High Lord's title on his mind. During meetings of the Council of Counts, Vestuli began sharing about their successful experiment at Castle Ramshorn. A few other counts and their attendants visited Meissen, who found himself playing host nearly every moon. There were many sacrifices those nights. Some of the visitors voiced the same concerns that Meissen had been feeling, but kept to himself. Keeping humans close at hand went against the natural order of things. Most vampires took a sadistic pleasure in hunting, pursuing, or seducing their prey. Some even liked to lure humans to their dwellings and feed on them slowly, draining their vitality and slowly driving them mad. However, others saw the merits of Castle Ramshorn's approach. Removing the need to track and hunt prey left a vampire with ample time to pursue other ends. The most magically inclined vampires were the first to follow Castle Ramshorn's example. After all, magic was derived from life energy. As undead creatures, vampires were magically impoverished. Human blood provided their only connection to the arcane. So, having access to an unlimited supply of blood opened doors to all kinds of possibilities. Castle Ramshorn experienced its share of uprisings. Most were quelled quickly. Meissen never even considered using Selene's enchanted bracelet. After all, what chance did a handful of farmers and workers have against dozens of vampires who commanded a legion of zombies? The vampire's illusion of safety remained intact until it was shattered by Giram Magehand Orfric's one-day rebellion. The day began like any other. All but a couple vampires with watch duty slumbered in their coffins or assumed a bat form and hung from the rafters. At dawn, The human townsfolk normally began stirring in their beds. Today was different. The doors to several homes opened in unison. Men and women walked silently toward the ritual platform at the base of Castle Ramshorn. They carried pitchforks, sharpened spades, axes, gardening tools, and other homemade weapons. Some even carried spears. Only one wielded a sword, Giram Orfric. Giram was in his late 40s. His short black beard was peppered with gray. Lord Meissen would later learn that Giram was a veteran of several wars. A decade earlier, he was a famed general who won several important victories. Giram chose a quiet retirement in a remote village, expecting to live out the rest of his life in peace. When Meissen's forces attacked his village, Giram wisely saw the futility of resisting. From the moment Giram was taken to Castle Ramshorn's growing human village, he began plotting his uprising. Giram knew the vampire's tendencies. He knew that a daytime assault was the human's best bet. But he also knew the previous uprisings failed, because the vampires could be stirred quickly. Giram's whole uprising hinged on dispatching the watchmen, who were posted at the four corners of Castle Ramshorn's walls. The watchtowers were well shaded to protect the vampires from the sun. The attacks were coordinated and swift. Three groups of five fighters each stalked a vampire watcher. They coated themselves in manure to mask their scent and moved with as much stealth as possible. Despite their supernatural senses, the vampires had grown complacent. All three groups were successful at plunging a stake into the heart of a watcher and dragging him or her into the brightest sunlight. Giram took the last vampire down himself, using a blast of force that he generated from his left hand while wielding the sword in his right. The blast sent the vampire hurtling off the watchtower, falling toward town. The sunlight burned the monster to ash before it had a chance to shapeshift and fly away. The flecks of ash sprinkled the town below. Giram leapt off the tower, using his magical left hand to blast the ground beneath him, cushioning his fall. He landed before the rest of the rebels, waiting at the castle's gates. Giram gave a speech. Short, to the point, inspiring. The rebels wanted to cheer, but they knew they needed to be stealthy. Giram blasted the front door. The rebels rushed inside, bellowing war cries. Stealth no longer mattered. All residents of the castle would have heard the front door shatter. The rebels had studied the layout of Meissen's castle. They went room to room, armed with silver and wooden stakes. Many vampires were slain. They weren't used to fighting for their lives. Predators weren't meant to be hunted. The rebels were halfway to Meissen's quarters by the time the vampire lord awoke. It wasn't the sound that woke him. It was the smell. The delicious, metallic scent of blood. Meissen listened for a moment, and his supernaturally strong ears picked up the sounds of battle in the castle. He rose in a hurry, pulled the sword off his wall, and flitted to his chamber's door. Six rebels were rushing through the stone hallway. They froze when they saw the vampire lord. Meissen, his face impassive, set about his work. He moved down the hall so quick that the first rebel didn't even think to dodge. Meissen cut him down. The rest of the rebels brandished weapons, but Meissen flashed his fangs. They flinched, and two more fell. The next jabbed a wooden stake toward Meissen's chest, but the vampire disappeared into a puff of smoke. The smoke coalesced behind the confused rebels, and Meissen emerged blade first. Two more died in a flash, and he sank his teeth into the neck of the last rebel, drinking deeply. He knew he should clear out the rest of his castle first, but it was just too tempting. Just as Meissen drained the last of the blood from the rebel, he was struck in the back by a powerful force. Meissen was hurled through the air. He landed with an awkward slide on the ground, and the old sword he wielded broke in half. Meissen sprang to his feet, ready for the next attack. Down the hall stood Giram. His left hand was softly pulsing with light. His right hand gripped a sword. Giram stepped forward, stalking toward Meissen.
"Your time is at an end, vampire!"
Meissen cocked his head to the side.
"So you're the one leading these people?"
"I am,"
Meissen laughed.
"Then you are a fool. Surely you know that every other uprising has been squashed."
Giram grunted. His left hand began to glow brighter. Meissen prepared to dodge, expecting a magical blast. Curiously, no magical attack came. Giram charged forward, his sword raised. Meissen sneered and darted forward with the blinding speed of a vampire lord. The vampire caught the rebel's sword by the blade. The sword cut into flesh, which began healing itself immediately. Meissen snatched Giram by the throat and hoisted him off his feet. Giram bravely held Meissen's gaze. He choked out the next words.
I am no fool, monster. This was planned carefully for years.
Meissen expected Giram to use the glowing magical fist. With a mere shift of his body, the vampire could use his speed to avoid a close-range blast. So, he wasn't surprised when Giram tried to use his magical hand. He was surprised by how Giram used it.
Time to meet my friends.
Giram fired a powerful blast of arcane energy into the stone floor. It crumbled, showering rocks to the floor below. Meissen and Giram fell together, the vampire losing his grip on his adversary's neck. Meissen was too startled to transform, or use one of his many tricks to cushion his fall. He crashed to the ground, landing awkwardly amid rubble. They landed in the center of the keep's main hall, near the front entrance. The caved-in ceiling filled the room with dust. Nearby, Giram cried out in pain. Meissen could smell the blood. Giram would never walk on that leg again. Despite his injury, the rebel leader shouted,
"Finish it!"
Townsfolk stepped through the dust. Each man and woman held a wooden stake or two. Meissen couldn't sense them until they drew close. Normally, he could smell the fear on a human from a half mile away. But there was no scent on these people. With a shudder, Meissen began to understand why. Courage. These people had been inspired by their leader. Giram had shared his courage with these otherwise fearful folk. Meissen felt vulnerable. There was a secret no vampire would disclose, even to each other, but they all knew it to be true. A vampire's true power came from fear. If he couldn't frighten these people, they could defeat him. He was going to have to fight his way out of this. The humans formed a ring around him, their stakes raised. There was only one way out of the ring, but it was in the direction of the keep's front door. Morning light shone through the door. The light meant death for Meissen. For a moment, Meissen wished Selene were here. Her command of the undead would have given the rebels more to contend with than slumbering vampires. However, a small part of Meissen, a tender part, was glad she was safely away with Vestuli. Thinking of Selene made Meissen remember a gift she gave him 2 moons ago. He cursed himself for not remembering it sooner. Meissen touched the bracelet on his left wrist. It was emerald green, with black, skeletal engravings covering its outer surface. He rotated the bracelet twice, and got to his feet. The humans were close. One lunged at him. Meissen snatched the man's wrist and pulled, spun, and flung the man at some of his comrades. In the confusion, Meissen dashed for the keep's front door. Giram shouted for his followers to give chase, and Meissen kicked him as he ran past. The sunlight burned. An uncontrolled, shameful scream erupted from Meissen as he crossed the grounds of his own castle. Pale skin sizzled and flaked off like ash. Meissen staggered, but made himself keep going. He was much faster than his human pursuers. If he could just get to the shade of the castle walls... From within the keep, humans screamed. The sounds of terror and agony rose from the castle. Selene Crow's enchanted bracelet had worked. The dead rose, pulling their rotting corpses from Castle Ramshorn's floor, walls, even ceilings. In less than a minute, the castle was overflowing with zombies. As Meissen hid in the shade of his castle's walls, he wondered if the rebels fought bravely to the end. With their powerful leader lying wounded on the ground, he knew the humans didn't stand a chance. This should have filled him with relief, even delight. Didn't he enjoy the misery of men? Wasn't he glad that he prolonged his own undead existence? Instead, Meissen felt something like revulsion. Must have something to do with the sunlight. Selene and Vestuli arrived 2 nights later. Per Meissen's request, they supplied him with a score of vampire underlings to help Meissen keep a closer watch on the town surrounding Castle Ramshorn. As planned, Meissen and Selene appeared before the gathered townsfolk later that night. They gave a speech about how the group of people chose to sin against their benevolent gods.
all the sinners had been destroyed. To atone, one person from each family that rebelled would need to be sacrificed. The sacrifices were many. After a couple hours, blood was overflowing from the aspersorium. They began catching the blood in buckets. Meissen gave a stern look to any vampire who looked like it might take a drink. He was harsher with the other vampires than usual, which elicited raised eyebrows from Celine. Something about this ritual, its cruelty, the suffering it was inflicting upon the family and friends of the victims, didn't sit right with Meissen. He even averted his eyes during a couple of the sacrifices. The last sacrifice would be a member of Giram Orfric's family. To drive the message home, Meissen's vampire servants did not select Giram's wife, but his only son. The boy looked about 7 years old. His mother screamed as he was ripped from her hands. A couple brave men tried to stand in the way of the two vampires who retrieved the boy, but when the vampires bared their fangs, the men shirked away. Meissen found himself studying the boy's face. The boy's eyes were set, his jaw clenched. He looked fierce, brave, almost noble. The boy stepped onto the dais without assistance and without needing to be forced. Meissen didn't see a trace of fear in the boy's expression until he approached one of the blood buckets. Beside the boy, the executioner readied his ornate knife under the boy's throat. That's when a flash of fear crossed the boy's eyes. Just his eyes. The fear was replaced a second later by determination. At that moment, Meissen saw Giram's courage in the boy, the same courage he saw in Giram's followers. This boy's spirit was strong. He would face death with grit and resolve, like a hero. Meissen felt something flutter inside him. It may have been inspiration, compassion, hope, or something else very human. Before he knew what he was doing, Meissen had stepped forward and snatched the sacrificial dagger from the vampire executioner. The executioner was incredulous. He reached for the dagger, and Meissen shoved him back, harder than intended. The executioner flew from the dais, crashing into the dirt halfway up the path to Castle Ramshorn.
"Lord Meissen, what do you think you're doing?" Celine demanded.
Meissen didn't address her directly. Instead, he looked toward the crowd and the rest of his vampire servants. He spoke in the practiced voice he used when he played God.
"This one has atoned. His blood need not be spilled this day. Return to your homes and remember to remain devout if any of you desire to join Elysium."
The boy jumped from the dais and sprinted into his mother's waiting arms. She fell to the ground, embracing her son, wailing with joy. Celine Crow stomped across the dais to Meissen. She brought her face close to his and said,
"What kind of fool are you? Do you know what you've done?"
Lord Meissen Jaren rose to his full height and bared his fangs.
"Step back, Enchantress."
He eyed the vampire servants around him. They looked confused and disappointed. Meissen knew he just squandered nearly all his credibility with them. He continued,
"We will speak of this later."
Celine held his gaze.
"Yes, we will."
She transformed into a bat and flew into the night. Later that night, Celine barged into Meissen's quarters. Vestuli followed a moment later. They found Meissen pacing back and forth on his ceiling. Vestuli spoke first.
"Enchantress Crow tells me you stopped a sacrifice today."
Meissen stopped his pacing and looked down at them. He said nothing.
"I am rather curious to hear your explanation," Vestuli continued. "Since I am sure you see the implications of breaking the structures we have so carefully constructed for our livestock."
That word, livestock, is that what these people were? Meissen used to think so. He resolved to keep these misgivings to himself. Instead, he said,
"Count Hecate, if you are looking for an excuse, I have none to give. I've been considering what happened, and all I can conclude is that my judgment lapsed."
With little movement, Vestuli shifted his own body upward. His feet alighted on the ceiling, and he stood upside down, eye to eye with Meissen. Celine did likewise. Vestuli crossed his arms. A grin that was not happy formed on his handsome face.
"Lord Jaren, please explain your actions this evening."
Meissen had forgotten what fear felt like. He clenched his hands to stop the trembling. Was that a cold shiver down his spine?
Count Hecate, Meissen began, carefully. During tonight's sacrifices, I found myself thinking about the rebellion for which we were punishing the humans.
Vestuli crossed his arms.
And what, exactly, possessed you to stop the ritual mid-sacrifice?
Meissen found himself clearing his throat. He told himself it must be the blood he drank earlier. Vampires didn't salivate or produce mucus. The only fluid in their bodies came from the blood of their prey. Meissen continued.
I realized that we were creating martyrs. By killing the innocent family members of the rebels, we were ensuring the next rebellion would occur. Showing mercy, to the rebel leader's son especially, could earn goodwill with the people. They now have less to avenge.
Vestuli's eyes narrowed. He stepped forward, standing nose to nose with Meissen. The Count spoke slowly.
Goodwill with the people. That is a very human notion.
Vestuli's fangs extended. He sniffed the air around Meissen and considered for a moment. Vestuli shook his head, as though disregarding a foolish idea. He took one step backward before continuing.
You didn't give them less to avenge. You gave them hope. Hope that their vampire god kings are infighting, that they have an ally on high. You must dispel this idea immediately, lest we will be dealing with rebellion from every human subject.
Meissen hadn't considered that all the humans might fight back. He had counted on fear to keep them in check. Meissen bowed his head in a sign of humility.
What would you have me do, Count?
Vestuli steepled his fingers under his chin, thinking for a moment.
Rectify your wrongs. Tomorrow evening, you will execute the rebel leader's son before the whole town. Should you refuse, or should your cowardice show its face again, I will reduce you to ash.
As he spoke, Vestuli's right hand clenched around a ball of flame. If Meissen had any saliva in his mouth, he would have gulped. He settled for staring straight ahead.
Yes, Count, he said, his voice subdued.
Vestuli extinguished the flame and wordlessly allowed himself to fall to the ground, shifting in the air without effort to land on his feet. Vestuli straightened his coat with casual hands as he looked up at Meissen and said,
See you tomorrow night.
As the first light of day approached, Meissen should have been supping on a pint of blood before taking his repose in the coffin in his quarters. The cup of red liquid lay untouched on his table. Meissen watched the sunrise, feeling an unfamiliar sense of dread. Like most vampires who lived for centuries, Meissen was a survivor. Dread for himself was not a foreign emotion. After all, fear was a tool. Fear could subdue, defeat, or control one's foes. Fear could alert one to danger and keep them alive, or at least undead. The dread Meissen felt as he watched the golden ball rise beyond the distant mountains was not for himself. Why should the boy have to die? It was unfair. Cruel, even. Meissen shuttered the window, steeping his room in darkness. He knew what he must do. The cloak was rough-spun, like that of a beggar. Meissen Jarn drew no curious or suspicious glances as he marched through the streets of the sprawling village at the foot of Castle Ramshorn. Once, he was nearly bumped into by a man carrying a sack of grain to his wagon. Meissen was careful to avoid contact, since a human walking into a vampire would feel a lot like stumbling into a brick wall. Meissen sniffed, and his nostrils were assaulted by the thousand flavors wafting through the air. Horsehide, man sweat, baked food, rotting fruit, leather straps, excrement, a wicker basket full of ripe strawberries, 10 kinds of dust, the iron taste of blood from a scab that just reopened on the blacksmith's elbow. It took him over 2 hours of wandering the streets before Meissen found the boy's scent. He smelled of apples, unwashed hair, and scraped knees. Meissen approached the house. It was nothing special. In fact, it was the smallest house on the street. Giram, Magehand Orfric, may have been a war hero, but he was not wealthy.
Meissen listened by a window, pretending to look for something in the pockets of his cloak. Within, Meissen heard the boy trying to convince his mother that his breakfast was finished so he could play with his friends. After convincing him to take one more big bite, the boy's mother relented. The son of Geromorphic ran out the door like he was being chased. Meissen watched him go, feeling foolish. What was he thinking? If he approached the boy dressed like this, he would be taken for a kidnapper. There had to be another way. Meissen glanced back, toward his castle on the hill, wondering why it no longer filled him with pride. Nothing made sense today. Meissen turned and walked toward his once-beloved castle, careful to keep his hood up and his cloak pulled tight to avoid notice and the deadly sunlight. When he reached the edge of town, he gathered the necessary materials, stacking them against the stage where the false gods performed their sacrifices and flaunted their power. It took Meissen half an hour to stack the right amount of wood and tinder. He found a nearby lantern with some oil still inside, tossed that on his pile, and used the blood within him to create a ball of fire in his hand, just as Vestuli had the night before. Meissen tossed the ball casually, and the wood caught fire. He made his way back to Geromorphric's family home, as the flames behind him spread from the stage to nearby buildings. Most of the houses and shops were constructed in haste, using nearby timber. Stone would have been sturdier and safer, but the vampires were in a hurry to populate their livestock pens. Villagers were already trying to fight the fires, but Meissen knew the flames would spread too fast for them to save most of the town. Meissen hopped upward, floating to the roof of a two-story inn. He looked over the town and his voice boomed.
The overlords are angry. Your gods have turned on you. They've set fire to the town and mean to slay you all. Set your backs to the castle and flee while you can. Flee, for come nightfall, none will be spared.
Nearby townspeople looked at each other, a mixture of confusion, fear, and unbelief painting their faces. Meissen shouted his warning twice more, using his supernatural strength to make his words carry across town. Some people took his advice and began gathering loved ones, animals, and the possessions they could carry. Others simply went about their business. Most had to contend with the fires in some way. As Meissen hoped, the fires seemed to lend urgency to his words. Meissen found himself worrying that the flames could injure those who were too slow to flee their homes. He shook the thought and stepped off the building, falling impossibly slow. A couple panicking villagers noticed, but the next instant, Meissen disappeared around a corner. He soon found himself in front of Geromorphric's home once again. Geram's wife was busy inside, but she appeared to be going about daily business as usual. That would not do. Meissen considered bursting through the door, but he settled for an urgent knock. When the woman answered the door, Meissen was careful to keep his face hidden beneath the hood.
Did you hear the news? The false gods have set fire to the town. Everyone must leave while they still can.
She looked at Meissen with eyes full of grief and devoid of hope.
It is another trick. Running would only draw their ire, and it would ensure we would be the next sacrifices.
Meissen was about to tell her what a fool she was. Didn't she know her son was due to be executed that night? But of course she didn't. She had experienced firsthand the folly of doing something, of trying. Running away would be different than rebelling, but it would still require action, and action would require motivation. Meissen pulled back his hood. He stood under an overhang just outside the front door, so the sun's rays missed him by mere inches. He smiled at her, letting the vampiric charms waft from him to her. She took a deep breath and her eyes glazed over.
"My lord," she began in a dreamy voice, "you say we should leave? Will you be leaving as well?"
Meissen nodded.
"Get your son and gather provisions. You must leave town immediately."
She smiled and curtsied.
"As you wish."
Meissen replaced his hood and glanced toward his castle once more. Smoke billowed into the sky, thick and dark, partially obscuring his view of Castle Ramshorn. His eyes narrowed, and his enhanced vision focused on one of the tower's windows. Meissen saw eyes, peering back at him with reproach. The smoke shifted, and he saw something he never thought would fill him with so much dread. Pale skin and raven black hair. A beautiful face. The face of an enchantress. Celine looked directly at him, and Meissen knew she saw through his disguise. It was time to stop being cute about this plan. If he wanted to get everyone out of town, he needed to use whatever means were necessary. Meissen looked into the nearby crowd and saw a man that he was pretty sure belonged to the city council. The man was elderly and round in the middle, but had a commanding presence. He was standing in the middle of the street, trying to calm people down and organize a firefighting group. The elderly man blinked, and Meissen was standing before him. Meissen used his vampiric charms once more, allowing the pheromones that carried the charm to waft into the man's nose. Meissen leaned close and said,
"You are a good and wise leader. Now lead these people out of town. You know the false gods are monsters. They are coming for everyone tonight. Go, and take everyone with you."
The councilman trembled as Meissen spoke, but he looked up at him with a trusting look that made Meissen think of a puppy. Meissen left the man standing there, confident that his instructions would be followed. It took Meissen less than 10 minutes to locate 3 more village leaders and charm them into leading the townsfolk out of town. Meissen returned to Girim Orfric's home, arriving just as Girim's wife and son were finally leaving. Girim's wife recognized Meissen as he approached, and appeared relieved to see him. Dragging her son by the hand, she said, "I didn't introduce myself earlier. My name is Lane Orfric. This is William." Meissen bowed slightly.
"It is a pleasure to meet you both. Please follow me. I know the quickest way out of town. We must make haste."
Meissen put their backs to his castle and led them west, toward a wood 4 miles off. Meissen knew several villages lay in that direction, protected by Fort Skaze, a well-defended fortification that Meissen and Celine had avoided attacking due to its mix of martial and magical defenders. Taking Fort Skaze would require either a prolonged siege or a pitched battle, and the vampires preferred the easy prey of lightly defended villages.
When they were no more than 300 meters past the last building, Meissen began hearing screams. Then came the unmistakable shrieks and moans of the undead. Celine's zombies were attacking the village. Meissen looked at Lane and William, who stopped with him. He found himself smiling. For the first time since he became a vampire, Meissen felt purpose. Previously, he had goals, tasks to accomplish, but nothing like this. Suddenly, keeping these people alive was the only thing that mattered. Maybe it was even more important than self-preservation.
"Keep going," Meissen said to Girim Orfric's family. "Keep going, no matter what you hear. Do not stop until you reach Fort Skaze. You will be safe there."
William looked up to Meissen, worried.
"What are you going to do, sir?"
Meissen pulled his cloak back and drew his sword.
"I'm going to make sure they won't catch you."
The vampire looked at the mother and child once more before shouting,
"Now go!"
They obeyed, and Meissen dashed toward the town. He moved with purpose, but slower than he should have. By the time Meissen rounded a corner to enter the central street, the town was infested with the undead. Thankfully, the bright sun regulated vampires to the indoors. They could have covered themselves, as Meissen did, but any vampire with half a brain knew to avoid being outside even with quality sun coverings. The sun was simply too dangerous. The zombies hated the daylight, too, but they didn't fear it as the vampires did. Still, Meissen knew that Celine must be straining the limits of her powers to keep so many undead on this side of the dirt during the day. The zombies ran, stumbling as they went, from house to house and shop to shop. Where people were found, they were swarmed and dragged to the sacrifice stage. The fire there had mostly burned itself out, turning the stage and the closest buildings into piles of smoky embers. Meissen considered the best way to slow the zombies down. There were ways to dispatch large groups of undead at once, but it required magic that only humans or necromancers had access to. Spells that channeled divine energy were among the best. With little other choice, Meissen brandished his sword and moved in. He was ignored at first. After all, the zombies were hunting humans, tracking them by the scent of brains and the sound of beating hearts. Meissen slew the first zombie with a lateral swipe that removed its head. He stepped to the side, cleaving the next in two. For a time, it was no different than harvesting wheat. He was the Reaper, returning the dead to their eternal rest. The zombies noticed what he was doing, but made no move to stop him. If their decomposed faces could form expressions, they would have been surprised and confused. Eventually, when Meissen had already felled over 20 of them, one zombie swung a club at him.
Meissen removed the arm with a vertical swipe of his sword before cutting the creature down. Suddenly, as though a switch had been flipped, the zombies turned on Meissen. He backed away, striking at the ambling bodies as they came near. They continued to fall like grass before the scythe, but there were simply too many. Their bodies pressed against each other until it was no longer clear where one zombie ended and the other began. They began to press in from all sides. Meissen knew there was only one reason these creatures would have turned on him. Celine knew what he was doing. He risked a glance upward and saw a hooded figure standing atop a nearby house, raven black hair streaming from the hood's opening. Meissen turned his back on the zombies. After all, his mission with them had been a success. Now they hunted him instead of the fleeing townsfolk. He ran, angling himself toward the building Celine stood atop. Meissen leaped, trusting his supernatural strength to carry him two stories into the air. To his surprise, his feet didn't rise more than 3 feet off the ground. He tried again, but got the same result. Meissen's heart beat fast with fear. How was he supposed to win without his strength, speed, and myriad other abilities? Wait. His heart. It was beating. Meissen put a hand to his chest, and the world seemed to slow around him. Thump. 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 His heart beat, strong and true. Meissen Jaren was no longer a creature of the night. He was alive. And he was weakened. There was no way to reach Celine without finding a ladder to climb. Meissen hoped that his legs would be strong enough to at least stay ahead of the wave of zombies that pursued him. He cut through a narrow alley, hoping the bottleneck would slow the zombies down. Meissen glanced over his shoulder and was glad to see his plan seemed to be working. The zombies pushed and shoved, each trying to scramble over the others to be the first into the alley. He looked ahead and gasped. Vestuli and Celine blocked the alley's only other exit. The alley was shaded from the sun, and the vampires had let their hoods down. Celine looked sorrowful. Vestuli was enraged. The Count raised a hand, and a shimmering wave of translucent, purplish energy shot forth and encircled Meissen's body. Meissen was immobilized. He felt himself rising into the air. Vestuli stalked forward, keeping his hand raised. Meissen struggled against the magical bonds in vain. The zombies were in the alley now, rushing toward the sound of Meissen's newly beating heart. At a gesture from Celine, the zombies halted. Vestuli glared at Meissen. "Lord Jaren," Vestuli began through gritted teeth, "you have surprised me. I thought you were a weakling, or simply a fool. I never would have guessed that you would lead an exodus of prisoners from your own castle." "I am no fool," Meissen said, "and I am no weakling. I was blind before, but now I can see." Vestuli chuckled dryly. "What do you see, O enlightened one? You are a vampire, an undead creature who traded his soul for immortality." Celine spoke for the first time. "I'm not sure he is undead. Something is different about him." Vestuli looked at Celine, confusion evident on his handsome face. "Not undead? What do you mean?" Celine levitated into the air, drawing closer to Meissen. "Listen, do you hear it?" Vestuli paused, focusing with his senses. Meissen saw his eyes widen. At that moment, Meissen realized his limbs could move. Vestuli had stopped concentrating on his spell, and it was weakening. Meissen didn't wait for Vestuli to regain his composure. He struck down with his sword, which slashed through Vestuli's hood and partway into his shoulder. Vestuli cried out, and the spell holding Meissen broke. Meissen fell, leaving his sword where it was. He was running before he touched the ground. He was surprised and exhilarated when he reached the open end of the alley. Meissen's hood fell back, and he felt the warmth of the sun on his face. There was no pain, only a comfortable heat that radiated through his body. Meissen heard the cries of the zombies as they resumed their chase, but he allowed himself one more moment of joy. He relished in the sensations, soaking in the brush of the wind, the smell of the dust, the way the sunlight reflected off a discarded horseshoe. He could feel blood pumping through his veins, powered by a heart that had been dead for centuries. He felt pain. White-hot pain lanced through Meissen as something pierced his back and exited through his chest. The blade came out red, stained with Meissen's own blood. He knew whose blade it was before she whispered in his ear.
"I'm sorry, my love," Celine said. "I know you understand."
Meissen went down to his knees.
"I understand," he said, coughing. "Perhaps, one day, your eyes will be opened."
Celine knelt before Meissen, letting him gaze into her eyes once more. Her raven hair framed her porcelain face, shaded by the hood she wore.
"Perhaps," she said, and she kissed him.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please do us a huge favor and tell a friend about the show. You can find all my book and podcast work at jakestoll.com. We are currently looking for people who want to join the What Next team. If you or someone you know is a voice actor, an illustrator, or a producer, please reach out. We would also love to connect with other content creators. Our contact info is in the show notes. Thanks again, and have a great day.